I'll say it again. It is so good to be among you this morning. I look forward to meeting those of you I don't know yet, and to reconnecting and getting to know better those of you who I do know, starting with some conversation after the service today. For anyone who's here for the first time or isn't connected with congregational life here at James Reeb, I want to share what sabbatical leave for ministers in our faith tradition is about. It's a recognition that providing spiritual and organizational leadership can be a little draining, and it's a structure that offers renewal. It is not, like in the academic world, a requirement to produce a project, although I'll talk more about that later. My letter of agreement with this congregation says I may take a month of sabbatical leave for every year I've worked, every 4 to 7 years. And so I've just taken 4 months of leave after 4 years of journeying with you all through virtual church, coming back in person, and rediscovering our rhythm. While I was away, I did things. So I did a lot of nothing. But I also did things to clear my mind, to rest my body, to reconnect with spirit, whatever name you use for that. I slept until I woke up. I played games on my phone. I binge watched This Is Us, an amazing woven story about four generations of a family that twinges pretty much every human emotion. I read novels. I traveled. I spent time with loved ones and in nature. I read novels. I've said that already. I got serious. I read more novels. I got serious about my physical exercise and my spiritual practices. And I went to church. Not every week, but I did go. I found space to breathe, to unclench. And so I shifted my perspective from a focus on doing to a focus on breathing. Not breathing, being and breathing. Things I preach all the time and don't do because there's so much to do. And I learned things along the way. I'm not entirely sure learned is the right word. I think it's more like remembered. My colleague, the Reverend Chip Rausch, offered a sermon at an installation service some years ago now. And in that sermon, he talked about the minister in the role of the reminder. He said, "We all know this stuff. We know that we're connected in the interdependent web of all life. We know that we need kindness, and others do too. We know that anger is sometimes appropriate and that forgiveness is more about that forgiveness is more about the forgiver than the forgiven. We need to all be reminded of these things once in a while." He continued, "I don't think I've ever preached a truly unique, truly new piece of wisdom. I have reminded those listening to me of the wisdom inside. Each of us can do this for others, and we pay some people to do it for us, to do it more consistently and more reliably." My most foundational reminder was that I'm a better human and a better minister when my heart is open. Since 2016, when I became unexpectedly single just 2 months before that election, and these two events together tested my faith in the universe, I have struggled with keeping my heart open. That is 8 years, y'all, the better part of my time with you. Through those years, I traveled through grief, accompanied by loved ones. I did the work of feeling and integrating anger and sadness and all the other things that happened in 2016. I did the work of staying present to those hard emotions with an open heart as best I could. I found some strengths I had forgotten I developed new resources and practices, and I eventually learned to trust that the universe had not dropped me after all. I took a sabbatical leave a couple of years after that, my first and your first, and I came back to a world shut down by a global pandemic and a congregation trying to figure out how to stay connected, and an amazing group of people who had changed things in huge ways that needed to happen. We have survived all of that. Look around. Look at these full seats. There's, I think, 20 people on Zoom. Yeah. We have survived all of that. And there have been some costs. I will talk more about that next week when we ritualize some overdue grieving together. I hope you'll come to that service. For me, the biggest cost has been to that big open heart of mine. I know now, after some time away, that I have done the thing we do in self-defense. I have closed down my heart over at least part of those 8 years, even while thinking I was being present to all of it. Right? Sometimes we need reminders. Most especially during the 4 years since COVID changed us so drastically. I have found a way to let it open again, and you will hear more about that. About open-heartedness, but I have found a way to let that happen again these past 4 months. And in the spirit of the Buddhist nun Pema Chodron's teaching that it's good practice to start where you are, I'll share what I've learned. No, I've remembered, right? Remembered what I need to hold it open. Need rest. Anyone resonate with that? Who needs rest in here? Who's tired? Yeah. My body has limitations that impact how my mind works. There's a connection there that I never understood until some wonky things happened to my body. There's a connection. It impacts how my mind works. It impacts how healthy my spiritual life is. My brain works differently than it did before I had COVID last year. I'm still trying to figure that out, but the moments of brain fog still happen. It's hard to access the gifts of spirit when my body hurts or my brain is struggling to function well. My reminder is that I function better when I rest. That means I need practice, right? Consistent practice for my body, physical daily therapy and exercise. For my brain, daily mental exercise, crosswords. For my spirit, daily reflection and prayer. These things take time, right? And what I'm busy doing, I don't have time. That is stopping. I need to rest well enough to get up early enough to engage those practices. That means I get to remember how to create and maintain boundaries. Something we hear about all the time. And I need to do things that make my heart sing. Right? Don't we all? This past month, I got an Amtrak rail pass and I traveled across the country. I stopped to visit with friends and family in Colorado, in California, in Arizona, in Iowa. I got to wander on mesas and mountains and rock formations, red ones, in forests and grasslands and desert, in creeks and on beaches and boardwalks. I had delicious food and wine. I mentioned California, right? I laughed and I cried. I had deep conversation with people I love. It is time now. I just got back on Sunday, y'all. This past Sunday. So now it's time for me to reengage with the things I have access to here in my regular life. This amazing spring Is it always this green in April? May? Like, I, why did I forget that? Yeah. Congregations and colleagues reminded me of some things too, like how it is my responsibility to make space, to rest, to practice, to let my heart sing. Like how I need to, bless you, like how I need to be able to focus on the work of ministry. My capacity to do ministry decreases significantly when my spirit is tired. We all got to see that before I left. My spirit gets tired when I forget about rest and practice and joy, and also when we don't have staff or congregational leaders to collaborate with, right? Congregations and colleagues reminded me that we do our best work when we understand our mission and our resources. Why are we here? And what should that feel like for us? And what do we have collectively to do that work? When we know who we are and how we aspire to be together, when we run with what we find to be energizing and inspiring, I can't wait to hear what those things are. When we're in right relationship with each other and the people and beings around us, when we're practicing generosity of spirit with each other and generosity of ourselves and our resources. And colleagues and congregations reminded me how we need each other in so many ways. My colleagues and I, we need each other for inspiration, for authenticity, for accountability. My human siblings and I, everyone, need each other for support, for companionship, for solidarity. You and I need each other to be able to serve our congregation's mission with purpose and with joy and with hearts open, to remind each other of our humanity in this increasingly inhumane world. We need to know that we're not alone. That yes, it is possible to live love and compassion and to work toward building a world where everyone can thrive. And that it's safe and needed to keep our hearts open to each other and to the possibility that the world exists. Which brings me to Reverend Nancy Schaffer's poem. What a beautiful expression of a loving community open to possibility. Breathing together in prayerful acknowledgement of the diversity of understandings among them. We start our exploration of the gifts of pluralism for this month with this prayer. You may or may not know that the monthly themes we're working with this year come from the proposed revisions to the Unitarian Universalist Association's bylaws. You didn't think I was going to let that go, did you? Which, if approved at our General Assembly this year, will update the language that includes the principles and purposes of our congregations that our congregations covenant to affirm and promote. Changes that language to language of shared values. The proposed revisions name love as, quote, the power that holds us together and is at the center of our shared values. And they include descriptions of values important to Unitarian Universalists: interdependence, transformation, justice, equity, generosity, and pluralism. Here's how the revision describes pluralism. We celebrate that we are all sacred beings, diverse in culture, experience, and theology. We celebrate that we are all sacred beings. We covenant to learn from one another in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We embrace our differences and commonalities with love, curiosity, and respect. We celebrate and we embrace. What that means to me is that we all get to bring our own experiences and understandings to our faith community. Me speaking here from the pulpit about what I've learned or remembered or, oh, just what is going on in the world and how we make meaning of it, right? And you, With me, among ourselves, in large groups and small, we all get to bring our experiences and understandings to our faith community, and we're all bound to honor each other's experiences and understandings. Doesn't mean we get to try to convince each other that our understandings are true and right. There is no one right way. Instead, it means we get to learn from each other. We get to learn how to adjust how we are with each other so that our understandings can all be expressed freely. We get to explore what makes our hearts sing and what makes others' hearts sing, and then seeing and honoring, celebrating and embracing each other's similarities and differences, work together to make our big J-R-U-U-C heart sing. The amazing theologian Howard Thurman famously said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it." Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Those of you who know me will not be surprised to hear that I don't agree that this is an either-or proposition. That I think we have to hold both what makes us come alive and what the world needs to be fully human. But here's the thing. If we focus too hard on what the world needs, if we do and do and do at the expense of being, we forget to remember and practice what makes us come alive. That's my foundational remembering. This is so important because the world needs so much, so very much, and so do each and every one of us in so many ways. And as I learned to remember these past 4 months, I cannot serve those needs if I am not practicing what makes my heart sing, what makes me come alive. So my hope for us, out of that remembering, individually, each of us, and collectively, all of us together, is that we remember what makes us come alive. What is the thing that makes your heart sing? And how can we put that all together and make me sing? We have done that. And we'll do it again. May it be so. And may we be so.